Yes, baby, it's the Champions League final. And I'm Graham. Hello, Groovers. Welcome to our compilation show. Just ahead of this week's All English, didn't we say that for the Europa League last week? All English Champions League Cup final in Madrid. Here's some of our fantastic guests reflecting on their experiences of the final of this wonderful competition. We begin with Liverpool and a section from a big interview I did with James Milner in December 2018. He reflected on the pain of last year's Champions League final defeat to Real Madrid, but also how much Liverpool learned and will now take into this weekend in the Spanish capital. Jimmy Carragher then takes us into the halftime dressing room at Istanbul in 2005 with the ecstasy of that famous Liverpool victory. The agonies are powerfully conveyed by ex-Manchester United midfielder Darren Fletcher, who was wrongfully suspended from the 2009 Champions League final against Barcelona. And Graham Souness then regales us with extraordinary tales of Liverpool's European Cup finals, including 1981 in Paris, when he left the Parc des Princes in the back of a police van. Finally, Paul Clement experienced Champions League success as Carlo Ancelotti's assistant at Real Madrid in the 2014 final. Sergio Ramos's 93rd minute header against Atletico Madrid, extra time. Do you remember? Let Paul be your guide for that historic night in this historic compilation show. I'd rather be looking ahead to positive things because I have quite widely tipped Liverpool, in my opinion, as very prominent chances to win the Champions League this season, because I see progression, I see experience. I've seen it in groups of players before that when you go the course, very often it brings a maturity and a desire, a learning that takes you onwards. Rather than pinpoint that, because there's two quite interesting games coming up, what do you and what has the group taken from that final last season? Because getting there was stupendous. It was an extraordinary watch from a distance. Some brilliant football, lots of passion. And then what seemed like a jinxed night, more or less. But you haven't come this far in your life or your career without drawing something from pain. So what do you take from that experience?
You take pain from it, like you said. That's one that and the Europa League for me is two massive regrets and disappointments in my career. But you take from that the drive and wanting to put that right and go again. I think the team belief that they should have taken from that. The experience, you know, you say you have experienced players and players who have won trophies and stuff like that, but it's different when you go into another team and you're in it together. So getting to finals as a group of players together with that manager and as a group of players, that can only stand you in good stead. I think, again, the belief of the teams are beat along the way. Mm-hmm. And I think that wasn't the problem before, even, you know, like I said before, we were played in phases, and I think over the last 3 years you've seen us develop, be more consistent, and we always felt like on a night, one night, we could beat anyone on our day. But I think even this season, you know, we've got our results, a couple of poor results, but mostly played pretty well. But not like we know we can, and I think few people have said that. And we have got another gear, which is the pleasing side, and maybe a steely toughness that we've added to our game, that we can get those results when, you know, you're not quite playing at your top level, and it's a long, long season. We know that. So coming into this period now, December, with all these games coming up, the league table always looks a lot different before and after, and you know, I think we're looking. Is it the most successful start to a Premier League season or joint or something like that? Yeah, to be in that position and people still looking at a season and us within the dressing room think, well, we can improve there, we can improve this, we can do this better. That's a massive, massive thing to have. I think if you're in the position we're in and you've had a great start to the season, but, you know, you're playing as well as you can be, you know, where do you go from that? So I think the fact that we know we can improve is very, very positive and something that we want to keep doing on this journey that we've been on, and hopefully we can keep progressing like we have done over the 2 or 3 years since the manager's been here.
What did you see in Real Madrid that night? Let's take the Ramos Salah out of it and forget it, and let's leave the keeper out of it. What did you see in them?
That experience and knowing how to win, I think that was what people were talking about before, that experience of being at finals. But, you know, arguably, maybe we've taken some of that and put it into ourselves the start of this season. Mm-hmm. Find a way to win.
Yeah.
You know, things aren't going well. You know, I think first 25 minutes, half an hour, whatever, I think we were probably the better team. I think when we got the equaliser, our tails were up, we were pressing all over the field. You know, I think at that moment in time, if you asked me who was going to win, I'd have said us. And then obviously there's a moment of brilliance, arguably one of the greatest goals in European final ever, I would say, being biased.
It's an extraordinary
The fact it didn't get anywhere in the voting. For
Can you understand that?
No, I mean, obviously, people who are doing it don't understand football, but, you know, Ronaldo's bicycle kick was amazing as well, but I think you put into it the context.
In a final,
to change the game of a European final, to do that, having just come off the bench.
To even just have it, because, you know, there's no element.
To attempt it, yeah.
To direct, I know what Marcelo's going to do, I know what I can do with it. I mean, it's
I mean, you've got a half a second to decide to do it, and then do it, and then from that point, obviously, there's only one team that looked like to win it, unfortunately. And I think we can take a lot from the fact that to go down in a final like that and keep going and get back into the game says a lot about our side as well. But from their side, it shows that experience, that know-how and winning trophies and being used to it. And I think, we just need to get over the line in 1 year. You've seen the teams progressing. We've seen them getting better and better. I think when I was at City, the first one was important, the FA Cup. Once we had that, you had that belief. We know we can win trophies and, you know, you go on to win the league the next year.
Before your story at Liverpool ends out, that you're lifting a trophy and enjoying doing so.
Thank you very much.
At 3-3, can you remember what you were worried about, that what Milan had?
Yeah, about them scoring another goal. It's strange, the mentality of football. You go from 3-1, 3-2, and you think, we've got to get a goal. As soon as you go 3-3, something cut, you think, oh, we've got something to lose now. You have that mentality. It's like when a team are winning 2-0 at half-time. Why do the other team always come back into the game or put you under pressure? It just happens. It's just the way it was. But I think what we put into those 6 minutes or the start of the second half, I think eventually sort of took its toll on us. And we were playing against a team who were far better than us. Far better than us. And then they changed it round a bit. Rafa had to change it round a bit. Serginho came on the left. Because we had Smicer, who was a number 10, if you like, playing right wing back. That's how the team had to be set up second half. Stevie went there then. So I think certainly in extra time we were thinking penalties. If we get to penalties, we've won the lottery. You know, we've come back from 3-0 down, we're 3-3, we're hanging on against the best side in Europe, and it took everything. We had me making tackles, Jersey making unbelievable saves, Shevchenko missing an absolute sitter. But no, towards the end there, it was get to extra time penalties.
Before we started the tape, I told you that one of my favourite Monday Night Football discussions was you and Gary, September 2013, talking about David Luiz. Chelsea have just lost to Everton. And there's a really good philosophical debate about what should a defender in the Premier League do? Should he defend? Can he come forward? Names like Baresi and Piqué are mentioned. It's a right good debate. But you're quite staunch about defenders defend. And defenders, you know, you shouldn't be one-on-one or going on a run or whatever. When the penalty was called in Istanbul, where were you on the pitch?
I was on the edge of the box. I was in the box.
You were?
I was a right centre-back stepping out with the ball, footballing centre-back.
Stepping out or driving right to the opposition box and sending off a nice little ball to Milan Baros, no?
Yeah. That's in a back three, stepping
what
out.
Happened?
So slightly different. But yeah, I think I played the ball into something. Did I get 1-2? I think I played the ball, stepped out and played it. And did Baros flick it round the corner for Stevie?
Yeah. You play the ball from about 8 metres outside the penalty box, right in the Baros's feet, who lays it off to Stevie.
Yeah.
Before the tackle's going in, there's a hand and it's yours.
I'm trying to get someone sent off, I think.
What possessed you?
I think, as I've knocked it into Baros, you know what, I think a lot of you're playing then, as I said before, on emotion. I'm not saying it was the wrong thing to do, stepping in. But the way we were playing, it was just like, so we're 3-2. So this is for the penalty, make it 3-3. So what I'm saying is, in them 2 minutes, everyone's just like, right, give me the ball. You bash it in, you're actually looking for the ball. I think I'm looking for the ball back off Baros. That's why I carry on my run. And I go one way and Stevie goes the other. And he flicks it around the corner to Steve. So I think I just carry on my momentum.
You'd have hit it.
Oh,
if he'd laid it.
Yeah.
Top right or top left?
It'd still be going where the Serginho's penalty went, I think, in the shootout. But no, I think you get caught up again with the emotion, the crowd. I'm not saying it was the wrong thing to do, but more often than not, it's not something I would have done.
But it's something you used to do as a kid. You know, you'd eight on your back at school, you played striker, then you played creative midfield. You were digging into something that you knew you had.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think every footballer, whatever he plays, will always play centre forward or centre midfield when he's a kid, you know, for his school team, Sunday team. So it's nice for that to come back in the middle of a European Cup final, those memories.
It's complete coincidence that you name those two But I want to ask about something that I suppose, well, if it were me, it would be a painful memory. You were falsely suspended for Rome. They both missed the camp. Now, I think for legitimate bookings, each of them, I was at the Turin game and I was sorry for them, but they were both genuine bookings. Yours wasn't. Yours was a mistake, so Alex called it a tragedy. And I was there the night before the game, impoverished, out with journalists. I was a freelance, I couldn't afford to pay my dinner. I was sitting there moping around, and who should walk along the side of the pavement but Ted Beckham. So he stops and says hello, because we did our ups and downs over the years, but we'd become very friendly, and he was like, I'm just walking around Rome to soak this up, you know, this beautiful city, and it's red everywhere. Because, you know, it wasn't just about David for him anymore. It was like, he's one of the most passionate United fans ever. So he was just gushing with joy about this. But you had to spend a lot of time on your own wandering around Rome that day because you weren't part of it. What were those couple of days like? What do you take from it as a lesson about life for 2009? What does it mean to you now?
Yeah, it's massive regret, but I've basically, my burning desire, like, from a child was to play in a Champions League final, and I've, like, three times, I've been, like, been on the bench twice and never got on the pitch, and maybe in the final that I definitely would have started, I get the red card, and I've just never quite achieved that, and the burning desire and drive that gave me, though, at United probably helped me produce good performances and stay there as long as I did in longevity and things like that. I spoke to my dad very quickly after the game, and he went, because there was talk of like about getting rescinded and that, he's like, forget about it. He said, get there next year, concentrate on winning the league. And I took that on board. In a lot of ways, your stock gets higher when you miss a game, and I think that's a perfect example of that for me. And that might sound, but you know, people, we would have done this or we missed, and sometimes, and by default, you become a better player. And I think that's true, because, and even in your times when you're out of the side, when you're ill, you're not been there for a while, you know, people, oh, we missed, people remember the good times, don't they? I think that's a saying. But even if my stock went higher in the Man United fans, I would still change it to play in that final, definitely, without a shadow of a doubt.
I expect that, aside from that passion to lift the cup and to play in that game and to fulfil a boyhood dream, the competitor in you and the analyst in you would have been looking at those two Barcelona sides. I'm leaving Moscow aside now, because effectively you're a Champions League winner. I might ask in a minute how you feel about that, but the history books will always say, you know, Dan Fletcher was part of a Champions League winning squad. But analytically, I'm fairly sure you'd have liked to have done what Jose was talking about there and set yourself about stopping what Alex said, you know, they'll kill you with your passing. And from my humble point of view, even if he listens to this, I think particularly in 2011 he picked the wrong team. You weren't available in 2009, so you couldn't rescind the record. But, boy, they got a lot of space in the two games. Now, I've followed Alex Ferguson's career closer than he has. And to hear Alex Ferguson say, after Rome, that goal after 9 minutes killed us. And that's the most atypical Alex Ferguson phrase ever. How can an Alex Ferguson team be beaten after 9 minutes at 1-0? But it was because that team wouldn't give the ball back. And I think both in 2009 and 11, when we spoke a lot before Wembley, and I was convinced that you were going to make it and that you would make a difference. I think, genuinely, maybe you think you're laughing at me now, maybe you think it's not your place to say it, but I think United would have been a damn sight closer to winning it had you been doing what you've just talked about, which was your art of making sure the good players can't play as well as they want to. That must be a separate frustration that you didn't get at. Test yourself against Xavi and Iniesta and Messi at their best and maybe beat them.
No, I think in 2009, I think it was a big part of our game plan and the way we, me not being there, as I spoke about, being the one to set a tempo and how we beat Arsenal in the semi-finals and how we, you know, we were relentless in pressing and getting against them and setting a tempo in the match. And I personally think we were favourites in that final. I know a lot of people won't believe it, but going in 2009, I felt like, I think maybe that, not that we didn't respect Barcelona, but there was no fear of Barcelona at that time. And I think that might have ultimately helped us go on and win the match. They weren't regarded as the great team as they were. They were on the, they were going towards that. That was almost like the game that stamped it.
Totally right.
And we felt, I felt we would still win the game even without me. And I think the manager speaks about people not following the game plan to the letter. And we might get away with that in other games, but maybe you don't get away with it in Champions League final. And he still holds true that the players didn't fulfil what was expected of them or what was asked of them in the game. and maybe we did change the style and we would play because I wasn't in midfield. And I think we did a little bit because we didn't really go to relentlessly press them and stop them playing as maybe we should have or could have. I regret it because I feel like I could have made a difference. Yep. I know people laugh at that.
No, I asked you the question and I'm saying it sincerely.
Yeah.
It's not praise because we're sitting across the table. I think if somebody can't see that, they don't watch football very well. Mm. Not just because of what you did or what Man United played like, but what Barcelona don't like. All right, neither of us can say you'd have won the game. You wouldn't have won the game. But if you even look at how the first goal comes and the amount of room that a 60% fit Andres Iniesta has to run with the ball before feeding it to Eto'o. Again, from my point of view. Now, it didn't mean no harm as a freelance journalist in Barcelona for them to win it. So I'm not actually saying I regret it, but it sticks out a mile.
Yeah, exactly. And we start the game so well. And, you know, in 2009, I was physically very, very, you know, powerful and box to box, and stamina levels were very, very high. I was, you know, I'd started to get a bit of strength and, you know, not being the biggest physique in ever. And I could have done it for 90 minutes, pressed and closed down and harried and made it so difficult. And the team was built to play that way. That's how we got to the final. You know, Carlos Tevez, Wayne Rooney, you know, they could run and press all day. We had the capabilities of doing it, but we didn't follow our game plan, and we started the game very well and should go in the lead. But it's true in the both games. For 20 minutes, we managed to be able to sort of impact the game, but over 90, we just couldn't do it. And ultimately, especially in 2011, they completely dominated and controlled the game.
That's because
I don't think I was physically able to do it in 2011. I'd just come back from an illness, the first bout of it, and looking back, I was very fortunate to even make the bench. I think in your head you think, yeah, but looking back, I don't think I was physically at a point where I could have done what I'd have liked to have done in that final.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
We had the mentality which was a bit like how they train a police dog. When you train a police dog, the dog never loses. The bad guy has to walk away. You know, he has to back off. So the police dog's always on. And we were a bit like that. We were always, the only thing they said to us before games wasn't, you know, you're playing a team that plays 4-4-2 or be care, worry about. We never mentioned opposition. What they would say is, if you lot are at it today, there's nothing for anyone. Nothing for any of them. And that included a European Cup final against Rome in Rome.
You've sparked a thought back to the last conversation that you and I had. It was on the telephone. And I think Jamie Redknapp had phoned you to tell you to watch the Paris final against Real Madrid.
Yeah.
And you re-watched it. And you said to me, we must have been horrible to play against.
We were hard to play against.
You used a stronger word on the telephone. Because nobody, we've now established, for anybody who didn't see that football, we've now established, we're talking about some of the all-time great British footballers. We're talking about an ability to play football which is gorgeous, flowing, swaying,
not
intelligent,
that
changes
that was
of direction.
That was a war of attrition. That
across,
was meaty.
Across the board. But that's what I'm getting to. So that nobody should mistake when they listen to this podcast that I'm going to the nitty-gritty, having forgotten the beauty. But you and the team, there was no messing with you at all.
Listen, it's Real Madrid. In Real Madrid, this classy act, what they are now, they've always been like that in my mind. They've always been such a special club. But I mean, they took us on physically. Mm. They didn't want to make it a game of football. If you watch that game, they were putting themselves about. And we met fire with fire, and it was a real... You watch some of the tackles, you would not get away with them today. And it was the Parc des Princes. The pitch was cutting up. They'd lined, the lines, the white lines, they were lined. It must have been years and years of this, and the lines were raised. The ball was bubbling all over the place, which gave you a great excuse for mistimed tackles. But it was... If you watch that game, they had some players that could
Steelica was
he
no
could,
mess with
Camacho.
Yeah,
he was a handful.
He was, but
there were a few that could all put the foot in.
Santillana, Juanito, and big old gentle, slow moving Del Bosque, who I'm sure wasn't the one that put his foot in, but
I can't remember
could
him.
Play, you had to shut him down.
But they were frightened of us. The three European Cup finals I played in, Bruges at Wembley, frightened of us, didn't make a game of it. Real Madrid didn't make a game of it. They had a game plan to take us on physically. And Roma, they were terrified of us.
You see, they, okay.
That's where Liverpool, that was a standing Liverpool had at that time. Can I tell you a little story to end? And listen, I was told this because I'd forgot this story, but I was talking about it in the last couple of days. I can't think who I was talking to. So this is how the game is different today. We have won the European Cup in Paris. Phil, Neil and I get drug tested. So we have to give a urine sample afterwards. We come out the stadium, it's empty. So there's no one waiting for us. We're just on our own, some part of Paris, and the streets are empty. And if you remember, well, you won't remember, but at that time, there was this sort of English hooligans were running riot. So the French police were really up for it. We come out, I'm saying to Neil, we've got a taxi. So we spend 20 minutes trying to flag a taxi down, no one will stop for us. No. So I'm thinking, what are we going to do? So blue lights come flashing towards us. I jump out and I put my arms up, stop, stop. So this van pulls up, and at the back of it, pile four or five or six, riot police, and they've got the batons in their hand. And I've had to go into my pocket and show them my medal, my winner's medal, and ask them if they'd take me back to the hotel we were staying in. It's on the tip of my tongue. So, you know, I'm pretending I'm kicking a ball. Yeah, player, you know, and here's my medal. You couldn't believe it. So Phil, Neil and I went from the Parc de Princes back to our hotel, the Meridian it was, in the back of this police van with the blue light flashing with these riot police. Can you imagine that happening today?
No wonder you're laughing now, because the modern footballers, and I'm lucky to live near some of the greatest, the Cossetta to look after. Yep. They click their fingers and everything stops. And it still seems ridiculous, but you've been left alone.
We've just won the biggest competition you can for a club side.
Because the boys,
but that was Liverpool. I never thought, up until I retold the story, I said 4 or 5 days ago, I never thought, well, any time that's...
We've been deserted.
No, that was Liverpool.
Well, lads.
Get on with it.
You wouldn't get treated like that in a pub team. If that was happening in a pub team in Llanlithgow or something like that, they'd be like, oh, lads,
at that time, I swear to you, we never thought twice about it. That was, get on with it. Who do you think you are to think we should spend our time looking after you? Not a chance. That was the way it was.
I've been at a couple of European Cup finals that have finished in unbelievably dramatic fashion. At 99 with United in Munich, with a club that is pretty strong in your heart, because the Chelsea game was just about as unbelievable with Didier Drogba's goal and what happened subsequently. There's been Liverpool, blah, 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 blah. So where was your mind and your heart and your nerves with about a minute and a half left in Lisbon and you're trailing 1-0 to the enemy?
Well, I thought, you know, time was running out and, you know, we'd had a couple of chances, a couple of half chances, and thinking, are you going to get another one? Are you going to get another one? And you're looking up at the clock. My understanding, I don't know if this is true or not, but someone said to me that the Atletico kit man had brought the box out, which I think had the T-shirts in and the caps probably. So, you know, it was getting to that time. People were, you know, some had started to leave the stadium. You know, it was getting to that point, 93. 5 additional minutes. I know Simeone was crazy about there being so many, which, you know, I thought it was fair. I did think it was fair with the stoppages and the time wasting, you know, for the set plays and the throw-ins. I thought it was a fair 5. Obviously, after we did score, and Simeone was remonstrating with the referee that was going into it, that he played 5, but, you know, we did score after 3, so nearly all games have 3 added on. So I don't think it was an argument that we'd scored on 94, 95, 96. It was 93. But yeah, obviously, clearly that's late. That's a late.
The fat lady is warbling and warming up her voice to sing.
Yeah.
Can you remember the goal?
Yeah, what I can't remember is how the corner came about. I can't remember that. But I remember, yeah, I remember clearly, like, Lucas right-footed out-swinging corner and then the ball being quite high. But, and then dipping down, and Sergio not actually being up that high himself in terms of the jump, but the connection was outstanding. And at that period of the game, so, I mean, it was right in the bottom corner. You're talking about against Courtois, 6'5", 6'6". He's got a massive reach. Anything but where it was, and he probably saves it, or it's going to go wide. So, a sensational moment. And I was off. I was off. I get there a bit late. I think they were, the huddle had almost broke up and they were heading back to the kickoff by the time I got down there. But you do see me just arrive at the end, and by the time I got there, it was like, come on, get back out there and let's finish this off.
Were you slow getting there because Xabi Alonso pushed you out of the way? Because
Xabi was down there as well.
He's up and off in his suit, isn't he? The goal was in and he's up over the wall and on the track moving faster than him. He's moved all night.
Well, I think I'm right in saying he got another ban for that.
Probably.
That ban, he got banned.
Doing occasional
for doing
work
that.
For UEFA.com. I can't comment on that.
No.
So, all right, let's leave his foul misdemeanour of running around in joy at a football match aside. Can I ask you to be frank and say that as soon as it was 1-1, did you kind of know you were going to win? Because I think everybody else did.
Yeah, we had a really positive feeling at that point. There were two things. You looked at the Atletico players from the psychological point of view about conceding a goal at that point. That's hard to take. But also physically, towards the end of the 90 minutes and then going into extra time, there were players really fatigued. You know, they were dropping with cramp. They had to do the Diego Costa change after 8 to 10 minutes. So that was one change. Two others, it was difficult for them to see the game out physically. I did have some concerns whether we would be able to, because we did have doubts over Cristiano's fitness, Bale's fitness. Di Maria at one point was down and was thought he'd actually torn his hamstring, but it had just tightened up, and I think the euphoria and the adrenaline just got them through it.
But there's no fitness like we're going to win, because they all looked as if it was day three of the season.
Yeah.
Once the equaliser goes in, they were playing glorious football. It was like playing as if it was October. The celebrations in Lisbon. What's winning a Champions League like?
It's incredible, and the fact that it was also it's a famous one as well. Right? The 10th, Arbeloa said it to me as the next day as we were going to the town hall to meet the mayor. He said, "We've just won the most important trophy in world football." And I never thought of it like that, but I do think about that moment now that he said that to me. So, yeah, great memories of the final, what happened afterwards. I mean, in Lisbon, not a lot really, apart from the great feeling in the dressing room. You're then onto the coach, and then we took the flight straight back to Madrid. So there was no partying. We got back to Madrid and we took the trophy.
Oh, trying to get to Sabella's, of course.
Yeah, we went from the Bernabeu to Sabella's, and incredible.
Well, some I think most people who listen to the beginning of you know what that means, but at least for as we wind up this interview, this gorgeous interview, explain what that is, what it's like, what it looks like, what Sabella's is in this capital of Spain that we're speaking in now. Tell them what it is.
Well, yeah, I mean, we got onto the open top bus at the stadium, and then you go down the main. That's a massive main avenue down in Madrid called the Castellana. And that goes to a point where there's a statue, and then there's the Cibeles, and then there's the... I'm not sure what the... It's an iconic structure right in the middle of Madrid. And that's the place where, if you're with Real Madrid, that you go and celebrate the victory. And there's another place, Neptune. Where Atletico go.
Yeah. Just less regularly.
There were hundreds of thousands of people on the street, and it wasn't, we didn't get to Cibeles till 6 a.m. and the amount of people on the streets was incredible. That was a fantastic moment. Sergio and Iker took the trophy up onto the platform as a tradition of putting the scarf around
in Britain,
the statue, and
health and safety wouldn't allow it. Because they're quite high up.
Yeah, they are. They put all the scaffolding up and it looked good.
All the same.
A few speeches, back to the stadium, and then we went off again. And then we reported back the next day, and that's when we visited. We went to the town hall, we went to see the mayor, Puerta del Sol, huge crowds, and then finished off back at the stadium where we presented the trophy to the supporters. 85,000 there, firework display. Sensational. But then...
It's gone. Finally.
Oh, what? It finishes. You know, you go off, the players go with their international, you're on holiday. You know, it's a memory, it's a fantastic memory.
It's a fleeting moment.
You know what, there's so much build-up to it. And I felt this a little bit with the other. I've been fortunate enough to be involved in 9 major trophies. And the journey is long and tough and demanding. The victory is euphoric, but it's short-lived because you have to move on quickly, because there's another season, there's another game, there's other trophies to be won. But these kind of interviews that really sort of bring it back when you start to really think about it and talk about it. You know, I have my medal, which is obviously something very special that will get passed on through the family. The club, with all the four trophies we won, gave us a miniature trophy, which is beautiful.
Yeah.
And we had a lovely watch as well for winning the Champions League, so all nice things.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.